Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Vavon Aleph, four lines down. Here the Gemara is going to review. We spoke yesterday about a machlokus between Rabbi Bo and Shmuel. Shmuel, whose statement is, Beishadonu dinayam din, ashenikra bedin chatzuf, that two people that are acting as a beisdin, that whatever they adjudicate, or the conclusion of the case, they give psak din, it's binding. Even though they're called the Beit Din Chatzuf, we saw in Tosfot, and we'll see it more explicitly today in the Gemara, that even if one, it's not as two, it means one, even if one person is done at the din, it's a good din. Why did the Gemara use two? Is to show you that even two is a Chatzuf. Rabbo, on the other hand, has a position we saw yesterday, that Shnaim Shedanu, the Dibra Kol, Ein Dinam Din. The two, less four that we said that a Yachid Mumche can be done at the Rabbim. Rashi said over there that Yachid Mumcha Dan at Rabbim is only according to one who says Ein Ruv Parshiot Kan, whereas Tosfot says that the position is more broad than that, and even Rabbi Bo would agree that Dan at that Yachid Mumcha can be done, and that's a Takanat Chachamim. So now Gufa Amar Bo Shnayim Shedanu Dinei Memanot Divya Kol and Dinei Din. Two people who go to adjudicate a case act as a Beis Din. Whatever they do is invalid. So, Eidvei Rabbi Abba, the Rabbi Bo, Dan et Adin, Vizika et Achaya, Vichiev et Azakai, person who adjudicated a case, and then mistakenly exonerated someone who was Chayav, or he obligated someone who should have been exonerated. Timei et Tahor, and here he made a mistake in Tuman Tarad, that he was defiled, or he said something is Tamei, even though it was really Tahor. And Tiyar at the Tamei, or the other way around. He called something that was Tamei Tor. Masha Asa Asui. Whatever he did is done. Umishalemi Beito. And he pays out of his house. So, first of all, Danet Adin, Rashi says, is Mashma, that we're talking about a Mumcha. Talking about an individual here who's giving a Psak Alocha. And what do you see when this person gives a Psak Alocha? Masha Asa Asui. Whatever he did is done. Then he has to Mishalem Bi Beito. The two possibilities are, if you say Yachid Mumche, whatever he does is invalid, then what's there to talk about paying out of his house? If it's invalid, we just unwind whatever he did. We just say that his Psak Halacha is irrelevant, or we reverse his Psak Halacha. But that's not what the Braisa says here. The Braisa says, Masha Asah Asui, what he did is valid and is binding. Just, he doesn't have that indemnification. So he has to be Mishalem Bi Beito. So if that's the case, this goes against Rabbi Bo, because we see here a single individual is being classified as a valid Beis Din, or action of Beis Din. Marzeh, Zakum Maiskinon. What's the case over here? De Kiblu Alayhu. Right, so that they accepted, the litigants accepted the din of the judge. So if they accepted the din of the judge, it's more like a binding arbitration than it is that he's adjudicating Beitzad Dayan, where it says, Iochi Amai Mishalem Bebeito. If the litigants accepted the individual as a arbitrator, or accepted whatever he would state as the locha, then why does he have to pay from his house? Their acceptance should by itself indemnify him from any obligations to pay if there's a mistake. Zamrulei, because they said to him, Dayan Lan Din Torah. Please go ahead and do for us, I guess in a sense, arbitrate for us, Alpi Din HaTorah. Arbitrate for us, Alpi Din HaTorah. Obviously, if he made a mistake, he didn't do it, Al Din HaTorah. So he failed to do their bidding. He failed to be, or to carry out the agency that they had asked from him. This is similar to what we saw in Rashi. Remember when Rashi said before, what does it mean? The kiblu alayu, right? And that Rashi gave the definition before im kiblu chalayu. Before when he said that a person who does not have smicha, over there it says im kiblu chalayu lo tishalem. If the litigants accepted you upon them, you have to pay. You don't have to pay below. If not zil shlim, you have to pay. If they didn't accept it, you have to pay. So Rashi defined what does it mean that they accepted it on you, and what does it mean they didn't accept it. So Rashi said over there, if they accepted it upon you, which means that they said, do for us a din Torah, plus whether it's good or whether it's bad. Good or bad, give us your ruling. The other possibility was that he didn't accept it. When they didn't accept it, it was that, go ahead and do for us a din Torah. So over here, you have exactly this. This is that interim or in-between stage. Rebo says, a dayan or anybody less than three is not a beis din, and they are not empowered to do anything. That's one stage. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have a statement yesterday where, we had it twice, but at least the first time, where there was a mistake made by an amora, and then he came before Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef said, it depends whether they accepted you or didn't accept you. So over there on that extreme, if they accepted you, you're potur legamra, you're totally indemnified. Then we have a case today where if they accepted it upon you, then you are okay, your din is accepted, but you're not indemnified. So you have that three different stages about what the status of the dayan can be. So the dayan can be totally invalid. He can be valid but have to pay out of his house, or he can be valid and not have to pay. So that continuum, right, depends on exactly how much the litigants accepted upon themselves according to Rashi. According to Rashi, if there was no acceptance whatsoever, you're chayav. If there was an acceptance, right, but the acceptance was simply dan din Torah, then if you do it right, you did what they asked you. If you don't do it right, you make a mistake, you didn't do a din Torah, you're gonna owe them money. They're gonna have to pay for the mistake. The other hand, if they say, arbitrate for us, right, do din Torah, we'll accept whether you make a mistake, don't make a mistake, we would just want to know what you think or what your answer is, there you won't even have to pay, and it's a good din. Those are three different possibilities along the continuum. Now again, Tosfos yesterday we discussed disagrees with Rashi's understanding of Kiblo Olayu. Here the Gemara, at least in part, supports Rashi's position that Kiblo Olayu is at least there's a stage where the Mekabel Din Torah is sufficient. Alright, now this is a question that was raised at Tzvi. I think you raised it 2 days ago. What is the issue here? Amalev Safra the Rabbi Abba de Tovamai. What mistake did he make? I mean, here where we're going to obligate the judge for making a mistake, what type of mistake did he make? Right? Why? Ilame de Tov Dvar Mishnah. If he makes a mistake in a Mishnah doesn't necessarily have to be something in Mishnah literally, but something that is mifureshet, something that is clear, clearly stated, and there's no questions about the halacha or no questions about what the Mishnah or the Gemara says about such a topic. Over there, what's there to talk about? Rav Sheshet, Amarav Asi, Tal B'Dvar Mishnah Choser. If you make a mistake about something that's explicit, the judgment or the conclusion or the Pesach Din is unwound. Right? We reverse your position. So that can't be the mistake he's making over here. Because if he makes such a mistake, it wouldn't be that the decision is binding and we just make him pay. Over there, there's no even decision. It's not classified as a decision because you made a mistake about something that is so clear and obvious. So what it must be? Ella Tal B'Shikul Adat. He made a mistake with the application of the halacha or in understanding what the conclusion of the halacha was. Something... right, okay. It would be the spread. That's the reverse of it. And not applying the halacha correctly here is you thought something different about the case, and therefore you applied the wrong halacha. Right? Again, as long as these things are not obvious, that we tell b'shigul adat, hechidomi. So Gemara wants to know, alright, so what's a bit hechidomi b'shigul adat? What's that case? What's the case that he's told b'shigul adat? So Gemara Papa going trade tonight, utrei amorai de pli gadodi. We're talking about here, we have a machlokas tanaim or machlokas amoraim in the Mishnah and the Gemara. The Gemara has no conclusion, no explicit conclusion about who the locha is like in this case, whether it's like this town or that town or this amora, that amora. But the sugyot in general follow one of the opinions. And he goes ahead and does the opposite. So what does it mean, sugyot da'alma? Rashi claims it's hiluch dina kechad minayu. The flow of the din is like one of them. I think the Rabbeinu Chananel says it a little more clearly, which is sugya de shmaita kichad minayu perish makshu umefarku alibe dechad minayu. The Gemara many times will continue to ask questions or challenge a position. Now the Gemara does that. We saw this actually in Baba Batra, where Tosfos disagreed with Rashi on the explanation of a certain Mishnah, because he says if you explain the Mishnah this way, the entire sugya ta Gemara means that they're arguing about a position that is a minority position in the Mishnah and is not accepted halacha. So why would the Gemara spend all its time shaklavatare about answering and questioning and answering about an opinion that is really not relevant in the halacha and is also a minority opinion and ignore the opinion that matters? So Tosfos over there says, actually, it has to be wrong. I mean, the Rashbam there. You have to be wrong because, in that case, we say the Gemara is shaklavatare must be according to the majority opinion of the corporeum halacha. So it's over here. That's the Gemara saying. Shikla dat. Sometimes the Gemara is not clear or explicit about who the halacha is like. But from the Gemara, either in other places in Shas, where the Gemara quotes it as a foregone conclusion, like one of the opinions, or even in where the machlokas is brought down, that the Gemara continues to either question or focus on one of the opinions. And that's an indication that the Gemara feels or is leaning towards that opinion. Right, Elim and Cain, of course, that if the Gemara brings a teiku down on that opinion and rejects the opinion because of that, that's not the case. They were shaklav v'tari, and then they come to a conclusion that's not right. But assuming that the Gemara is talking and trying to answer for that opinion and conclude for that opinion, then the halacha is like this. So this person didn't read between the lines in the Gemara and see that the halacha was this way, and therefore the mistake is b'shikla dat. That he didn't see it so clearly what the Gemara was saying, so he extender, he gave a psak lacha by a valid opinion. But in the end, we don't, even though the Gemara doesn't say explicitly, we don't subscribe to that opinion, la lacha. Alright, so in that case, it's, I know shikla dat. So that's the case of shikla dat. So lema kitzonai. Let us say that this position of Rabbi Bo is actually a machloket tanaim. This machlok is between Shmuel and Rabbi Bo, whether less than three is a valid based in. Should be the same as this machlok tanaim that we're about to explain. What's that? Machlok tanaim. Bitzua. When it comes to pshara, when it comes to settlement, bishlosha, divrei Rabbi Meir, requires three dayanim. That's what Rabbi Meir says. Chamimrim, pshara biyachid. A settlement can be concluded or overseen by an individual, a single individual. Savrua l'kuliyama, the Talmidim in the base measures thought. L'kuliyama makshinam pshara l'din. We are makish, we create some sort of hekish juxtaposition that tells us to learn halachos of pshara from din. This is what they're arguing about. The Mar Savar din b'shlosha. Right, one of them, meaning Rabbi Meir, thinks that a din must be done with a minimum of three. And since din is done with a minimum of three, so too, pshara is done with a minimum of three. Umar sever, din bishnaim. And the chamim hold that a din is with two, or can be with less than three. Since a din can be less than three, so too, a pshara can be with less than three. Now where do you see that the Torah is makshinan pshara the din? Where is such a concept that makshinan pshara the din? Rashi quotes the pasuk from Shmuel Bet, where it's talking about David, after David goes and is victorious over many of his enemies, he returns home, and over there it says, Vayimloch David. David comes and rules over the people. And there it says, did mishpat u'tztaka l'chol amo. He did mishpat and tztaka to his whole nation. So that's mishpat being din, tztaka being pshara. So mishpat u'tztaka, they are brought in the same pasuk. Tosfos questions this understanding, because the word staka sounds like something positive. Staka versus mishpat. Mishpat is din. Staka sounds like bifni mishrat din, or something that is act that you should pursue, something that you should do. So if that's the case, that would indicate that pshara is a mitzvah. We're going to see later on in the Gemara today, there's a machlokas, whether pshara is a mitzvah or not. And even according to the one who says it's a reshut, he still quotes this pasuk as his source for pshara. So if he quotes this pasuk as a source for pshara, and he still says it's not a mitzvah, Tosfos says he doesn't see that as being the source. That's one. He says, if you want to use the other pasuk from, which the Gemara is going to bring today, from Zechariah, which is Emet u'mishpat, right, shiftu b'sha'areichem. Over there it says Emet and Mishpat. So over there, Emet, Mishpat, and Shalom. So the Gemara concludes, so it's Emet, Mishpat, Shalom. So there it says Mishpat, which is again Din. Right, and then Shalom, which would be Shara. So again, shalom is not something that is neutral. And shalom is something that's positive and something that someone should pursue. If that is the case, that shalom is something positive and something that someone pursue, then again, you would have to conclude that it's a mitzvah to do pshara. And again, we're going to see later in the sugya today, that's not the conclusion of all parties, even though they learn out pshara from this limud. So Tosfos leaves it as he doesn't know where the source is. There are others, I think the others I quote, tzedek tirdof. That there are two types of tzedek. There's a tzedek, that is ayidei mishpat, and there's a tzedek ayidei pshara. And over there, tzedek is a neutral term. It's not like tztaka, but a normal neutral term of tzedek that one should pursue such items, but not that it's a mitzvah. So there, tzedek and tzedek are laid on an equal footing. That tzedek means mishpat, tzedek means pshara, and that's the hekish. But whatever the hekish is, the Talmidei Beis Medrash thought there was such a hekish, and since there was such a hekish, they said, okay, now we can understand the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as being the same machlokas between Rabbi Bo and Shmuel. Obviously, the fact that they set up the machlokas this way is based on a premise or anacha. What's the anacha that is based on? That you are making shara l'din. As soon as if you undermine that premise, then you can say the machlokas is about that premise itself, and that's what the Gemara is going to do. Look, the chuliyama din b'shlosha. Everybody agrees that din is b'shlosha. V'hocha kamiflige. This is the machlokas on this anacha. This given that we had before, that we said before, oh, everybody agrees that pshara is, there's a hekesh between pshara and din, that's exactly what their machlok is going to be about. The marsar makshin and pshara ledin, one of them holds that we are makish pshara ledin, Rabbi Meir, since everybody holds that you need three, a minimum of three, therefore when you're makish that minimum of three to din, you'd also need three by pshara. Marsar the chachamim say, lo makshin and pshara ledin, pshara and din are two different vehicles, since they are two different vehicles, therefore, even though by din you require three, by b'shara, you only require one. So it says, Lema tzlata tanai, b'shara. Let us say now that we have three opinions in b'shara. The Mar Sever b'shlosha, Rabbi Meir holds you need three people. Mar Sever b'shnaim, the Chachamim say, right, over here, b'shara is b'achid. And before, in yesterday's Gemara, at the end of yesterday's daf, we had Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion says, Adin b'shlosha, u'pshara b'shnayim. Adin is with three, and pshara is with two. So now you have three opinions. You have Rabbi Meir saying three, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying two, and the Rabbanan saying one. So ma'asar b'shnayim, ma'asar b'yachid. So I'm Ravacha, b'reid Ravika, b'itim Raviyam, Rabbi Shlamiya, Arshamiya, man d'omar trey, afilu chad nami. The position of two and one are the same. There are only two positions. It's three or not three. So three is the position of Rabbi Meir. Not three is the opinion of the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Man damar trei afilu chad nami. The one who says two also means one. Ha'idakamar trei. Keitel avalei sa'adei. So the reason that he should have two is not because two is necessary, but two is better because then he has two edim to the fact that the settlement or the pshara was reached. So having two edim has a value. It's not that it's necessary, but there's a value to have two people there. And this is one of the proofs that Tosfos brings yesterday to the fact that when Shmuel says that a Beis Din that is dan, Shtayim Shidanu, Dinam Din, it's called the Beis Din Chatzuf, that's not literally two. It means anything less than three. Less than three means two or one. So that's basically what the Gemara is laying out here is that there's the Torah grant tells us there's a type of din. That din is the din of three. So now once you're less than three, one or two, it's irrelevant. Less than three is different. Three is a Beis Din, a din. Less than three, it doesn't matter. One or two, it's all the same thing at that point in time. It's not three. So that's the conclusion here of the Gemara. Now, the Gemara is now going to begin a sugya on Pshara. Before we begin the sugya on Pshara, I'll just give you a little introduction to Pshara. Pshara, which is settlement or compromise, right? How do we view Pshara? And that's what the Gemara is about to discuss here. You have two possibilities when it comes to a case or litigants that have an issue between them. There are two ways to solve the problem. One way to solve the problem is pshara, is to have a settlement, right, or to have some sort of compromise between them. The other way to adjudicate, to solve the problem, is to go to din. To go to din and have a judge or an arbitrator adjudicate and give us a conclusion in the case. So you can either get a din or psak din, or you can get a pshara, you can get some sort of compromise or settlement to resolve the issue. The question the Gemara is going to ask, very simply, is which is better? Is pshara better, or is din better? Then that might depend on how you view what the Torah is after. What is the job of a beis din? Is the job of a beis din to reach the truth? I mean that we're going to see examples of this in a minute, that Beis Din, first of all, is called, and we know that from the Limudim, Elohim. The fact that Beis Din is already called Elohim, you know, conjures up the fact that they share a common name with God, conjures up images of the absolute Emet. God is truth, God is Emet, so we would expect Beis Din to do the same. It's to reach the truth, the absolute truth. That's all. Also, we're going to see, and we know this from the Mishnayot and Avot, when a Beis Din sits down to adjudicate, we're going to see this in the later half of today's daf, that it's Hashem is with them. Hashem is present in the Beis Din. And Hashem's expectations are that the Beis Din will act in a way that would accord or be in consonance with what God would want. And that means, get to the truth. So if you believe that the job of Beis Din and the job of the Dayanim is to reach the truth, then you're obviously going to believe that din, or getting to the truth, or getting to the Pesach Halacha, is the optimal situation. A subpar, or a suboptimal conclusion would be compromise, or a settlement. Why? Because a settlement or a compromise, by definition, is not the truth. Because it's every party is abdicating some of their rights, or giving some of their rights in order to come to a settlement. And almost by definition, a settlement is not going to be the truth, or not going to be the absolute right answer. On the other hand, if you believe the job of Beis Din is to reconcile between the parties, the job of Beis Din is not to come to the truth, but rather to bring shalom, ben adam lechavero, to ensure that parties who have a dispute, parties who are quarreling, parties who have issues with each other, that they should come out and no longer have those issues, or they should be able to reconcile somehow between the parties. Now, if you see that as being reconciliation being the job of Beis Din, then you would view Pshara as being the first, maybe, or the optimal solution, because Pshara is exactly that. It's trying to bring a resolution between the parties. It's trying to bring, right, shalom between the parties. Din is a last resort. Din is, if we are unable to bring the parties together, then we impose upon them whatever the conclusion of the Dayan is, the Pesach Halacha. In order to have the parties reconcile, we have a din where we conclude and we say, this is the way it's going to be, and therefore there can be no more questions. But din, in that case, would be, again, the last resort, and Pshara would be the first thing we choose. So that's one thing you'd have to understand. Is the job of Beis Din simply to reach the truth, where din would be the optimal solution? Or is the job of Beis Din to reconcile between differing parties or quarreling parties? And therefore, Pshara would be the optimal solution. Now, even if you say that the job of Beis Din is to reconcile between our parties, what is Beis Din's job in this situation? If Beis Din says, let's go to Pshara, let's go to a settlement, who does the settlement? Or who is supposed to, who are the parties to the settlement here? Is it that the litigants have to settle between them, and Beis Din simply acts as a consultant? Beis Din's a consultant, or gives a fairness opinion, meaning that they are simply urging or prodding the litigants to reach a settlement. But in doing that, they said the litigants can ask the Beis Din, is this a fair settlement? Does this make sense? Is this the best way to come to a settlement? And, or is the settlement that we reached fair and just? So that could be the job of Beis Din. In that case, it's the litigants that are settling, Beis Din simply acting as an overseer, right, or a stamp of approval. The other possibility is that Pshara is driven by Beis Din. That Beis Din actually, in some senses, is acting a little bit like an arbitrator. Beis Din is saying, okay, you accept, we're going to compromise here, we're going to settle over here. And when we're going to compromise and settle over here, we're going to tell you what the settlement is. We're going to tell you the optimal settlement. Now, again, in the end, they cannot impose a settlement on the parties, because all the parties here are abdicating rights. If they're abdicating rights, Beis Din can't impose a settlement. The only thing they can do is have the litigants accept the settlement. So they can push, they can prod, they can bully the litigants to it in a direction to accept it. But in the end, they have to have the litigants accept the settlement. Now, when you come to the Halacha, if you look in the, right, if you look in the Rambam, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, by the time you reach that point in time, there's really not much. You don't see any of this differentiation. In that the Rambam writes, the Lashon Rambam over here, about settlement is, Mitzvah lomar lebalei dinim b'tchila b'din, atem rotzim o pshara. When they come to court, do you want to have a din or you want pshara? Im ratzu pshara osim b'hem b'hem pshara. If they want a settlement, we do a settlement. Chol beitin shosim pshara tamid, or is that meshubach? Anybody has a pshara? That's great. V'lav ne'emar mishpat shalom shiftu p'sharechem. So again, the Rambam is clear, the Shulchan Aruch quotes it as well, that it's like almost like you have by the Leila Seder, more pshara, harizeh mishubach. The more and more pshara you do, that is better. So it's clear from here that we're choosing pshara as being the optimal solution, or reconciliation between parties is the optimal solution. And the same is true from the poskim here, that the pshara right, is not imposed by the Batei Dinim, but rather the Balei Dinim reach a settlement. It's the Balei Dinim that reach a settlement, and therefore you're going to have a kinyan between them. They have to have some sort of conclusion to the case between them, which is that they have to have a kinyan between them. We'll see this.
And the Beis Din doesn't even suggest what the actual din is.
No, they might, I think, again, they might be advisors. They might, they could suggest if the parties ask for a suggestion, or they
that
could.
Right. Totally contradictory to what the emes is.
That we know, right, we know that. And that's the question, whether which is better, Pshara or Emet. That's exactly the question. And here it's clear from the poskim that Pshara is given the, right, the, viewed as the optimal or the forefront. And number two is that the litigants are really doing the Pshara. What is obvious in the poskim over here, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, is less obvious in the Rishonim and in the Gemara itself. And that's where we're going to see the differentiation that I just spoke to you. Just to give you some examples quickly, we're going to see in the Gemara, the Machlokas, whether Pshara or Din is better, which is the first Chakira that I described to you. The second Chakira and Pshara, I'll just show you quickly. One is here, the Tosos over here, the last Tosos of Yilchasa, and the Ri brings two opinions. The Mordechai basically says that the Ri has this Safek. What is the Safek? If two parties, two litigants come and they're going to do a Pshara, they agree to have a compromise or a settlement, when do they make a Kinyan? In order to accept the Pshara. Do they make a Kinyan after they've reached the settlement? Or do they make a Kinyan before they make the settlement? What's the difference? The difference between them is, where do you view the judges in this case? If they make a Kinyan after the settlement is reached, that shows you what? The settlement's being done by the parties, and in the end, they have an exchange. They have some sort of Kinyan that enforces or locks the settlement in. Rashi claims that it's a Matana. Right, Tosus claims it's a din of mechila. You could see it, right, as being some sort of this kinyan somehow locks in the settlement of the two parties. On the other hand, you could view or you could demand that the settlement be that the kinyan be done before the settlement is reached. What does that mean? That really creates something called binding arbitration. In the sense that if you make a kinyan beforehand, you're basically accepting that the judges will impose a settlement or an agreement upon you, and you'll accept it. The acceptance is an acceptance of the ruling of the Beis Din, right, and the context that they are doing, which is Pshara, that they're going to accept what the Beis Din does in a Pshara. The difference between those two, whether it's a Maisa Beis Din or not. If it's a Maisa Beis Din, right, in that case, if they accept it, it might be that it's a Maisa Beis Din now, or if you think Pshara is adjudicated or done by a Beis Din, you might think that that's a Maisa Beis Din, you don't need a Kinyan at all, which we're going to see an opinion in the Gemara. On the other hand, if you think that a settlement is between the litigants, then you would do the Kinyan afterwards, after the settlement is reached, and also it would obviously not be classified as a Maisa Beis Din.
Why do we know that? What, if we have the Kinyan beforehand, what forces us to say that it's binding arbitration?
No, I think when it's beforehand, but there is something binding. Why? Well, you're not making a Kinyan on anything. If there's no settlement yet, what is your Kinyan about?
It could be that the Kinyan that they're being coming at a decision that they make between themselves.
No, they don't need to. A Kinyan is a Gemir Tadat. That's what a Kinyan is. A Kinyan is a Gemira Tadat, which means that I've reached something, a point, by my action is now showing what I'm thinking. So you can't have Gemira Tadat on the lack of settlement. You can't have a Gemira Tadat that whatever we agree to is final. No. That's once you have something that you agree to, then you can say that we have a Kinyan to be Gemira Tadat. I'm not going to back out of it. If you have a Kinyan before the case, the Kinyan has to be on something that's in front of us right now. What do you have Gemira Tadat about right now? Must be that you have Gemir Tadat about what Beis Din's about to tell you or impose upon you. You can't have Gemir Tadat about what you're going to settle in the future. That's not a Gemir Tadat. It's not what a Kenyan's set out to do. All right, that's one. The other one I'll just say, for those who still have normal, regular Gemaras, it's in the Rif, the Shilte Giborim. It's in the Dabe Rif. It's in the Aleph Amud Bet. In the Dabe Rif, the Shilte Giborim. Aleph. Again, there are many Rishonim, different Rishonim here. I'm just quoting you some just so you can see that it's still, at this point, it's still alive, that these questions are alive in the Rishonim. It says, V'nira b'inai, she'im kol advarim alalu amurim, elok she'dayanim rotzim la'atil pshara, v'fi anira b'inim, v'lo shalom midata bali dinim. This whole idea that you need a Kinyan, and that you want the Beis Din is not allowed to do pshara, if they reach a certain point in the din. I mean, like today in the court system here, that the judges always encourage settlements even when they reach the end of the case. Even when they've reached a conclusion, they're ready to give up sack, they'll sometimes say to the litigants, go and settle. Go and settle before I give the judgment. So they will push. The Gemara here is going to show that they're cutoffs, where we don't allow settlement anymore. Here the Shulchan Kiburim says that's only true when it's the Dayanim who are pushing or imposing the settlement. Do we say that there's a cutoff where they can no longer do that? But if, on the other hand, Avalim Heimodim Lahem Tiva Pshara, that if it's the Pshara, the settlement's coming from the side of the parties, or the two parties are willing to agree, meaning that we appease them to the point where they're willing to agree to this, right? That can be even after the Gemar Din. You can do that. As long as they're not being pressed. They're being appeased and encouraged. It's bringing peace between parties. That's the way of Aaron. So it's clear here, what do you see from the Shilte Giborim? There's a difference between when parties reach a settlement or when they reach a pshara, versus when Beis Din imposes on the individual. Beis Din's imposition on the individual is different than pshara, which is brought about by the litigants, and that should be encouraged. So here, again, the Shilte Giborim almost in one shot discusses the difference between pshara and din, which is, maybe it means the difference between reconciliation versus din, reaching the truth. And even within pshara, he says that there are two types of pshara. It's a pshara that's imposed by Beis Din, which is a ma'aseh Beis Din. And that might have limits to how far we can go with that. Versus the pshara that is generated by the individuals, by the litigants themselves, which is there. That's avad shalom ben adam chavero. That's wonderful. That can be done even after the psak halacha. That can be done at any point in time. Because that's what we're after, reconciliation. Reconciliation doesn't have to be before the psak, it can be after the psak, as long as it's come about to the parties, because they're going to be mochel anyway. The whole idea of the settlement by the parties is that they're going to hand something to each other through a kinyan, they're going to be mochel to each other. So even if it's not the truth, the fact that they are now at peace and the parties have an agreement, that's enough. Alright, we'll do the Gemara now. I just wanted to give you some background about it. You'll see these ideas come out. I'll try to point them out as we do them in the Gemara. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Shema mina, pshara, ein tzricha kinyan. It's clear from here that a pshara, a settlement, does not require a kinyan at all. If you think it needs a kinyan, if you think it requires a kinyan is able to overcome deficiencies. So now, why do we need a Beis Din here? Why do we need a Beis Din? Because there are two ways to have a judgment be final, meaning that the litigants cannot back away from it. That the litigants have to accept whatever the decision is. One way is a ma'aseh Beis Din. Ma'aseh Beis Din, a Beis Din is a minimum of three. A ma'aseh Beis Din would impose on the litigants and they can't walk away. They have to do what Beis Din imposed upon them. That's one. The other way is that they do what? They have a kinyan one from the other. They make a kinyan between them. So again, Rashi says the kinyan is a matana, that if they make a kinyan, if he gives them whatever the conclusion of the case is, he grants them this, grants them whatever he was supposed to pay, and he did it midato, that's mitzkayim, because there's a kinyan over here. Or, Tosa says it's midin mechila, that you're waiving rights, you're somehow giving up rights over here. Either way, you can create or simulate a binding agreement that Beis Din could impose on you, because it might be Beis Din by simply having a kinyan. So even according to the opinion who says that you have to have three dayanim, you should have an alternative, which is that you could have two dayanim with a kinyan. So it must be that pshara does not require kinyan. Because if pshara doesn't require kinyan, then that's why you need three. The argument is whether you need a ma'aseh Beis Din to have a pshara to be binding, or you don't need a ma'aseh Beis Din for pshara to be binding. The Gemara says in the end, v'yuchasa, pshara tzricha kinyan. Pshara needs a kinyan. Needs a kinyan. Now, what does it mean? The pshara needs a kinyan. This is what we just discussed. Does pshara mean a kinyan? Mean that the litigants settle, and therefore they need a kinyan? Or is pshara mean a kinyan? Is even with Beis Din. Even if it's a Beis Din that's imposing the settlement, you still need a kinyan because it's not classified as a ma'aseh Beis Din. So it's not classified as a ma'aseh Beis Din. Therefore, you need a kinyan in order to make it into a ma'aseh Beis Din. In order to make it, for instance, like when you do the kinyan before the settlement is reached. When you come to the Beis Din, you do a kinyan in order to have the judges become like binding arbitrators that you need a kinyan for in order to obligate you, because it's not classified as a ma'aseh Beis Din. Right? Or even if you... Alright, so that just shows you some of the chakira that we saw before. Now, Tana Rabbanan.
So in other words, that's a pshara to have a kinyan even with three?
Yeah, right. Even with three. It sounds like it's like an arbitration that you're accepting upon yourself. Right? Or you might say that it has nothing to do with it. Beis Din is not adjudicating by Pshara. They're not. They're just giving advice. If they're giving advice, you need a kinyan between the parties. Again, it will depend on how you view what Pshara is. Is it from the side of the judge, the side of the litigants? And again, whether Pshara is considered a Maisa Beis Din or not, Beis Din will determine whether you require a kinyan or not. Tana Rabbanan, Kishem Shadim B'Shlosha, Kach Bitzua B'Shlosha. Just like a din requires three judges, so too Pshara requires three judges. Nigmar Hadin, if the din is concluded, I ata rashai libtoa. You cannot then have pshara. You cannot then have a compromise. Rashi says, what's nigmar adin? That they gave the psak. They gave the psak aloch out. They give out the psak aloch. There's no such thing as settlement anymore. Once you've reached the point of din and you say, ploni chaya, ploni zakai, there's no settlement anymore. Tosa says, of course, nigmar adin. What do you need? What do I need Rashi to tell me? When I need a Gemara to tell me, once Nigmar Adin, there's no Pshara. They passed an Aloch already. There's nothing to talk about anymore. So Tosa says that it's not literally that they gave Pshak Aloch, but it's
they've already established.
Right, they know what the conclusion is. They've reached the point where they had Masal Matan, right, they discussed, they thought through the case, and they've reached the point where they're ready to say, Atachayev Atazakai. At that point, the Beis Din or the judges are obligated to give the din and not to reach out for pshara. We're going to see later in the daf today that it sounds much more like Rashi. All right. Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yosef Galil Omer, Asur Libtoa. Listen to this. Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yosef Galil, be the first opinion now in a machlokas about what is the, what, how do we view pshara. He says it's Asur to have compromise. Cholaputzea, harizeh choteh. Someone who goes and settles or compromises, that is a, he's a sinner. Anybody who gives a bracha and praises those that settle, that's disgusting. Right? Those that are butzeya, compromise. Those that give blessing or praise, those that are compromising, neitz Hashem. Hashem doesn't want that, is disgusted with that. Ella ikov hadin et ahar. We want to reach the din, get to din, get to the conclusion. So what's clear from Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, he views din as being the optimal solution, not pshara. So back to what we said before, what does that mean? He views the job of Beis Din is to reach a conclusion, but reach the truth. Compromise and settlement are the opposite of truth in general. They just can't be. By definition, settlement and compromise mean that both parties gave up something. They had to, right? They came to a middle ground. And that middle ground, right, then we didn't reach the absolute truth. Shinemar. Ki Mishpat Lelukim Hu. The Mishpat belongs to God, but Mishpat Lelukim Hu again is the Beis Din or the judges are called Elukim. So we're talking about Mishpat, when we talk about Elukim, we're talking about truth. We want to reach the absolute truth. That was the position of Moshe. Aaron had a different approach, was that he tried to reconcile between the different parties. Shnemar, because it says, Torah emet haita b'fiu, right? The Torah, the true Torah was on his lips. Va'avla lo nimsa b'sfatav. There was no injustice, right, on his lips. B'shalom umishar halach iti. He went with peace and straight with me. Rabim yeshiv me'avon. He protected many from sin. And over there, the psukim afterwards, they talk about the sugar, it says, Kisiftei Kohen Yishmeru Dat, is a Malachi, it's the Torah for Todot. So over there it says, Siftei Kohen, we're talking about the Kohen. Who's the Kohen? The Kohen is Aaron. So over here we see that Aaron tried to bring peace, and that which he said, all he tried to do was to bring peace and reconcile between individuals. So okay, why does Aaron, according to this opinion, settling? We said you have to go for din. So Rashi claims over here the reason he did it is because it was before the litigants came to court. Before they asked the judges to intervene, before they came to court, Aaron would try to have them settle. Settling out of court, that's not a problem. It's only once you ask the Dayanim to get involved that the Dayanim are obligated to reach a din and to reach the emet. If you don't involve the Dayanim before you reach court, that's fine, reach a pshara. So that's what the Rashi explains it. Tosas just says on the other hand that Aaron was not a Dayan. He says, Perush, Kevin Shaloh Haya Dayan, Gloria Din Balafanov, Elifne Moshe, but that is the Shari. Moshe is the Dayan, Aaron's not the Dayan. So Moshe is, right, obligated to get to a Din and not permitted to have Shara. But if they come to Aaron, Aaron is about shalom. Aaron's not a dayan, so he's not obligated to reach the din. He's obligated to reconcile between the parties. And that's what he did. So that's one opinion. Rabbi Lezer Omer, now Rabbi Lezer here is explaining the pasuk of Botei Abirach Neitz Hashem. Arei shegazal sa'ah shel chitim, stole a bundle or some measurement of sa'ah worth of grain, wheat. V'tachana v'yafa, he ground it up, he milled it, he cooked, baked it into chala, v'yafish menu chala, and then he takes off of it chala to give to the kohen. Ketzed mevarech, what bracha do you make when you mafrish that chala? Ein ze bevarech eliminates. You don't have to make any bracha, because this is what we call, quote-unquote, mitzvah haba be'avira. Here you are trying to do the mitzvah of chala, make a bracha on it, when you stole that which is here. So that's a mitzvah of avera. We don't permit it. It may be over here that it's unique in this case. It may not be that this is a general principle of mitzvah of avera, but simply that here you want to do a bracha. A bracha is an indication of bringing Hashem's name to the mitzvah, speaking to Hashem, giving thanks to Hashem on something that is stolen. That is unacceptable. Not that it's mitzvah of avera, because the avera was already done. He might have been koneh with the shinoi. If he's koneh already with the shinoi, it's not mitzvah of avera, because it's already his. But the fact that it came from an avera may be enough. So disqualify it from a bracha, because you can't have a bracha. It's like bringing a stolen karban to Hashem. Right? That's unacceptable. So to hear, bring a bracha for Hashem from something stolen. Here the pasuk says, "Botzeya berach neitz Hashem." Right? Those that are botzeya, break bread. That's berach, and they want to make a bracha. They mafish chal, and they want to make a bracha. Neitz Hashem. Hashem is discussed with it. Rabbi Meir Omer lo niemar botzeya l'keneged Yehuda. The pasuk is referring to Yehuda, Yehuda, one of the sons of Yaakov, Shneamar. V'yomer Yehuda l'echav mabetza kinarog et achinu. What is the worthwhile? Why is it worthwhile that we kill Yosef? Let's throw him into the boar. Let's sell him right to the Ishmaelim. So Yehuda here who gave the advice to sell Yosef. That's mabetza. What's the value in that? So that's what it means. Botzeya berach neitz Hashem. Hashem is disgusted with the actions of Yehuda. Anybody praises the actions of Yehuda, that he saved Yosef, he's disgusting. The one who praises the Botzeya over here is Ma Betza Kinero Getachino Neitz Hashem. Hashem is disgusted with it. Tosus puts out over here that Yaakov gave a bracha to Yehuda. Forget about anybody else, Rachel gives a bracha. So the Tosus differentiates between Maseh Tamar and the Maseh Yosef. But Yosef is wrong, you can't praise his actions by Maseh Yosef. But the Maseh of Tamar, where he was admitted to his wrongdoing, right, and he backed away, and he did tshuva, over there you can give praise to his actions. So it depends what you're talking about in Yehuda. And Yehuda has actions that are praiseworthy, other actions that are not praiseworthy. The famous, and we know before that the famous idea by Yehuda is, he realized that his brothers would listen to him, because in the end they listened to him, then he should have gone further, he should have taken Yosef back to his father. And that's the problem here, that Yehuda did not act in a strong enough manner to save Yosef. Yeah, he saved him from death, but he could have made a bigger stand, and he could have taken, if the brothers are going to listen, he should have taken a stand and brought him back to his father and kept him alive. Alright. Now, the Gemara says, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha Omer, mitzvah libtzoa. Here comes our second opinion. It's a mitzvah to do pshara. Whereas before we had Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Loza, Rabbi Yosef, asur libtzoa. It's asur to compromise. Here we have the exact, like, 180 degrees away. It's a mitzvah to compromise. Shinemar. Emet, from Zechariah's quote before, Emet, mishpat shalom, shiftu b'shareichem. Halo, b'makom sheish mishpat, in shalom. How can you have mishpat, din, and shalom, and have peace? B'makom sheish shalom, and mishpat. In a place where there's peace, right, in reconciliation, there's no mishpat. Elezu mishpat sheyesh bo shalom. Where is there an adjudication where there is peace? Avimer zeb tzua. This is pshara. So you'll see over here, number one, the objective of a Beis Din over here, based on this, is what? To reach, to have reconciliation of the parties. Number two is, this could be a Maisa Beis Din even. It's possible here that it's a Maisa Beis Din. What type of mishpat are we expecting from you? Shalom. Reconciliation. That's what we expect of you as a Beis Din to do. To bring about reconciliation. David Omer, this is the pasuk I think we quoted before for Rashi's source for the hekesh between mishpat and tzedakah, and Tosfos quoted the other pasuk that we just quoted. I meant mishpat shalom shiftu b'sharechem. Says over here, Vayi David osim mishpat utzedakah. Right, so David did mishpat utzedakah. Alo makom sheish mishpat in tzedakah. There, right, it's a in a sense an oxymoron. They're incongruous, right? Incongruence. You can't, irreconcilable to have Mishpat and tzedakah. What's tzedakah? In mishpat. If you do tzedakah, there's no mishpat. Eloiz mishpat sheish bo tzedakah. What type of mishpat has tzedakah involved with it? I mean, Meir, zeh bitzua, that's pshara. So again, these are, both these psukim, and they conclude the position of Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha is clear. Pshara is a mitzvah, because the job of Beis Din is to reconcile between the parties. Reconciling between the parties does not mean reach a emet, reach a din. It means bring settlement, bring, right, a reconciliation of the parties, and that could be whatever vehicle. This is one of your toolbox. One of the tools in your toolbox is pshara, and maybe even be a better tool than din, because over here we're after, the optimal is to bring reconciliation between the parties, and that's the mitzvah. I can't say that because he says that the word mishpat is defined by this. Mishpat means din. He's saying the definition of mishpat is shalom. The definition of mishpat is tzedakah. Mishpat over here obviously means that they came to din. See in a second, the Gemara is going to say the opposite of what you're saying. Atan the kana kamo, right? What are you going to do? What is the Tana Kama going to do with this pasuk over here? I mean, the pasuk of Mishpat Utztaka, the pasuk of Emet Mishpat Shalom. What is Rabbi Yossi Aglili going to do? Rabbi Lezer Benosha Rabbi Yossi Aglili going to do with this pasuk? How is he going to interpret? He can't learn the pasuk this way. So it's clear that that's not what it means. He can't learn the pasuk this way. So Dana Tadin is Zigat Zakai V'chiev Etachayav Ra Shintchayev Ani Mamon. He sees that there's a poor person here, and the poor person, he has to judge against the poor person. The poor person's wrong, he's going to lose the money. And then he pays out of his house. You have a rich individual and a poor individual. He adjudicates the case, and the truth is that the rich person deserves to win over here. So he does mishpat because he passes the case, and the rich person gets it. But he sees now the poor person lost money because of this. When he lost the money, he goes and gets tzedakah from his house, and he goes in and he gives money to the poor person as tzedakah. He says, here, for me, this is a gift to you. So that's the judge doing mishpat and tzedakah. Right? Mishpat lezeh, shigzir lo at mamon. It's mishpat to the rich person because he got what he was justified in getting. Tzedakah lezeh, shishilim lo betoch beito. The judge went out of his way to take care of one of the litigants. Right. So kashule, the Rabbi had a problem with this. Hai the cholamo. The pasuk, which we don't have, it doesn't quote it over here, but as I told you before, the pasuk where David says, "Vayi David osim mishpat utzaka l'chol amo," for all of his people. Now, it shouldn't say l'chol amo, but rather should say le'aniim mipayle. So over there it says mishpat utzaka l'chol amo. No, he's doing mishpat for everybody and tztaka for the aniim. That's not mishpat utzaka l'chol amo. Chol amo is modifying both mishpat and tztaka. Hello, what's the case? Other Rabbi says av pishlo shilei mitoch beito. Zeu mishpat utztaka. Right, so even though he didn't pay out of his house, that's still called mishpat utztaka. Mishpat laze, utztaka laze. It's mishpat for the one, the rich person over here, and utztaka to the other party. It doesn't have to be rich and poor here. There are many two litigants. The one who won gets the mishpat. The one who lost gets utztaka. Why? Mishpat laze, shechzir lo memano. He was rightfully the owner of the money, and now he gets what he's rightfully, what he's entitled to. Utztaka laze, shosik zela, mitachad yodo. He did him a favor. He took away from him what he didn't deserve. He took him away from Gzela. He helped him do tshuva. So that is Mishpat Utzdaka. Shimon ben Menasi Omer, Shnayim Shabo Lefanecha Ledin. You have two parties that come before you for a din. Ad Shlo Tishma Divrehem, O Mishmi Tishma Divrehem. Right? If you, before you hear what they have to say, or once you have heard what you say, V'yata Yodeh Lehechan Adin Noteh, but you still don't know the conclusion of the case, they go out and settle. So here, number one, you see from here two things, I think. One is, he's encouraging the parties to settle, right? Which means that the optimal solution is to have a settlement, reconciliation, not necessarily din. Number two is, it seems from here that it's not a ma'aseh Beis Din. I mean that Beis Din has information and they could settle, and then they instruct the parties to go out and settle. They tell the parties, try to go settle. So they're leaving the parties to do the settlement. The Beis Din doesn't seem from here to be imposing the settlement. Right? Once you've heard their positions, and you have a sense of where the conclusion of the case is, you've reached a point, a point of no return in the case, that is that you can't back out of it. Because once you know the din, it's unfair. Once you've reached the point of emet, you can't go back to reconciliation. Before you reach the point of emet, you can say reconcile, have shara. But if they already turned to the dayanim, and now the dayanim reached the point of truth, you can't back out of it. Now this might be different than what we saw before. We had the brisa before. It says nigmar dani atadur shadim tzoa. So we have to understand what's the difference between this and the position before. The position before said only at gemar din are you not allowed to the tzoa. Over here it says even before the gemar din, once you've heard the parties and you have any sense, you have a gut feel for where it's going, over there already you can't ask for pshara. Shenemar, because it says, Poter mayim reshit madon. The one who releases water, that's the beginning of a quarrel. Lifnei hitkala, before it's revealed, hariv, before the quarrel comes out, or it's revealed, netosh, right? Abandon it, leave. I mean, try to, you have to stop, you have to nip the quarrel in the bud. You have to nip a problem in the bud, because once it gets too far, you can't stop it anymore. So the same thing here. You got to nip it in the bud. The dayan's got to get them to reach settlement or pshara early on in the case. Once they've already presented their positions, once they've gone so far in Beis Din, it's very hard to, first of all, impose settlement, to have them have settlement. And number two is, settlement may not be right anymore, because it's already gone to the point where reconciliation might be impossible because of how far they've reached in the case. Before the altercation or the quarrel becomes out or is heated, becomes more heated, you can abandon it or uproot it. Once it's reached the point where it's already, you know, heated, you're not able to stop it anymore. It's a snowball. Shimon Karka doesn't say anything. We don't know what he says. He just tells it's mitzvah litzo. He doesn't tell when it's mitzvah litzo. He doesn't deal with that issue. Okay. Here there's a question about the Girsa, whether it's Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, Rabbi Shua ben Lakish. There's a question about the Girsa. Amar, Shnaim Shibalu Din, Echad Rach Vechad Kasher. Two people come to a judge to adjudicate. One of them is a nice guy. The other one is a pain in the neck, basically. He pesters the judge. If the things don't go his way, he's all over the judge. He gives him a hard time. Ajlo Tishma Divrehem. Right, before he hears what they have to say, or after he hears what he says, but he has no idea where the din is going, I don't want to adjudicate here. Because what might happen here, you're going to obligate the one who is the chazak, the strong one here, when the one who pesters, and then the rest of his life, he's going to have this guy pestering him and running after him and driving him crazy. So he doesn't have to begin in that. The obligation of the dayan to stay in the din relates to whether he's already at the point where he's coming to a point where he can adjudicate, or simply he's just in the beginning of the case. He doesn't have reached that point where he has. But Mishin Tishrei D'Rambam, I tell you, Delechan Adin Otei. Once he's heard what they have to say and he knows where the din is going, I tell you, Chol Amalei, and he's Zakach Lechem. At that point, he can't do it because we have the Torah tells us, Shenemar Lo Taguru Mipneish. You're not allowed to be afraid when it comes to giving mishpat. When it comes to giving din, you can't be afraid of the conclusion. You have to do what's right. The demand is to do it right, no matter what the risks are to you as a judge. So again, before you reach the point where it's mishpat, there you can walk away from the case. But once you reach the point of mishpat, you're in violation of the Doraisa to walk away from this point because you're afraid of one of the parties. Because the Torah says, once you've reached mishpat, you've got to say it, and say it the way it should be. Meshua ben Karcho Omer, Ma'ayin the Talmid sheyashiv lifnei rabo v'raz chut ani v'chuva la'ashir. How do you know when there's a Talmid sitting before his Rebbe, and he sees something positive for the ani, and a chuva la'ashir, minayin shlo yishtuk? I know you shouldn't sit there silently. I mean, that he shouldn't give kavod to Rav. He shouldn't be chulei kavod to his Rebbe and not say something. Don't be afraid. I mean, don't be afraid, even in this case, either from the Ashir, or don't be afraid of the kavod of your Rav. You have to interject. You have to stand up and say something right away. Don't let the case go on. So, Amar Rabbi Chanin, again, here there's a girsa issue. It sounds like here, Amar Rabbi Chanin, lo taguru mipneish means, lo tachnis debrecham mipneish. Don't be afraid to say what's inside of you. Don't hold in what you're supposed to say. Say it. Say what you have to say. Number one, there are two possibilities here why you have to say it. Either don't wait for your Rebbe to give the wrong psak and afterwards come around and say, I have it, this is wrong, I'll show you why it's wrong. No, tell your Rebbe up front, even though you're not going to get the kavod for that, tell him up front what is wrong. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is, don't be mitchashev. Don't worry about the kavod harav here. Rather, you should go ahead and say what you need to say in order to ensure that the din comes out properly. The edim should always know who they are testifying about. Before whom they are testifying, and who in the end will extract from them if they do something wrong. I mean, the Edim are testifying about God. That's what they're saying here. Before God, and God's going to have to rectify the problem afterwards. And we're going to see the Gemara in Makot and other places. Darshan, Vamdu Shnei Anashim is not the litigants, but rather the Edim. Vifnei Hashem, they're standing before Hashem. V'yu dayanim yodim et mihen danin. The dayanim should also know who they are judging. They're judging God. Lifnei mihen danin, before whom they are judging God. Umiyatad lifrimim, and God is going to have to make them pay up if they do, if they pervert the din, or they make a mistake that's improper. Because Shemar Elukim Nitzav Badat Kel, God is amongst the Edat. The Edat Kel is the judges over here. God stands amongst the judges that we have in Mishnayot in Avot. The God is present when there's a din, when the Edanim Hashem, God's present. I said before to you that this concept, that din, that the objective of Beis Din is to reach Emet, you see here this idea that God's there. God's in the Beis Din. God, when you do something wrong, you're going to force God. If you don't reach the absolute truth, God's going to have to work afterwards to rectify the situation. You have to know who you're testifying about. You have to know who the judges are judging. It's all about God and reaching the truth. Now again, you could say that that is only once you reach the Gemar Din. Or maybe, according to what we said before, Elizabeth knows, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that's the job of judges. The job of judges is to know that God's in their presence and they're trying to reach the absolute truth. B'Yoshevat Umer, B'Yoshevat says, V'Yomer LaShoftim, says to the Shoftim, Ru'u Matem Osim, Ki Lo La'Adam Tishbetu, see what you're doing, because you are not judging people, you are judging Ki LaShem. You are judging LaShem the simple shot is that for Hashem, but rather the interpretation of the Gemara here is Ki LaShem means that you are judging God and not people. Shema Yomar Dayan Mali Batsarazat. Maybe the Dayan will say, what should I bother? I have to reach the absolute truth. And that is so hard, that is so difficult, and I'm at risk here, why should I do this? So Tamalomar, this is a conclusion of the pasuk there in by Divrei Yamim, says Imachem b'dvar mishpat, that are with you with the dvar mishpat. It was that over there, meaning that Imachem b'dvar mishpat, the Imachem b'dvar mishpat, right? Ki LaShem v'Imachem b'dvar mishpat. So over there, it sounds like God is with you when you're doing judgment, and God is alongside of you with the judgment. The Gemara is going to say no. Imachem means Imachem. B'dvar mishpat means that with you is the mishpat. You are the determiner of what mishpat is. So what does that mean? Ein lo l'dayan al mashein avrot. We had this in Baba Basra. The dayan can only do what he knows. What he knows and what he sees. Dayan has to do the best he can. He has to reach the best conclusion that he can based on the evidence in front of him, based on the case that is presented. And that's what he has here. So Gemara says, Eichi dami Gemara din. What's the Gemara din? Amar Yehuda Marav, Ish ploni ata chayav, Ish ploni ata zakai. Which is the definition Rashi gave above against Tosus, and Tosus admits that Rashi sounds much like more Rashi in the Gemara here. Amar Rava, Halacha, Kribshua ben Karcha. Halacha is like Kribshua ben Karcha, which is mitzvah libtzoa, that it's a mitzvah to come to a compromise. Ini, he says, really true, Ravuna Talmidei, the Rav, Hava, Ki Avak. Ravuna was a Talmid of Rav. And Kihava Atul Kamei Dravuna Amarlahu Idina Bitu Ipshara Bitu. He'd asked them before he started the din, do you guys want a din or do you want a compromise? Now, if it's a mitzvah to do a compromise, why is he even asking them? Have them settle. So it's a my mitzvah nami the kamar bishwan karcha, mitzvah lamemarlahu, idina bitu, ipshar bitu. That's exactly the mitzvah that he wants. That's the mitzvah you have. The dayan is a mitzvah to ask the litigants, do you want din or do you want pshara? He has to give them that option. And he can even encourage them to go to the side of Shara. But that is, yes, when he begins the case, he's got to offer them those possibilities of Shara or Din. All right, we'll continue with the sugya tomorrow.